call a meeting of the Ag Policy Committee to order. We have a full agenda today, and a lot of members are in and out with bills and other committees, so the agenda is going to be fluid as to when we have authors here in attendance at the committee, so bear with us as we work our way through the seven or eight bills on the agenda today, and we'll take them in the order of when we have bill authors that come into the room. Here's the new bird. Thank you. Representative Neuberger, you came into the room and you're at the top of the list. So we will...
Well, let's not beat around the bush.
We'll let you catch your breath.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Neuberger has House File 910. And I will... Okay. We don't have a quorum yet. We're close.
All right.
So why don't you explain your bill, what it does, and we will... We'll take it from there, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill, it expands on what we can do with the home cottage food industry. Currently, folks are able to do this kind of work from their home. What my bill does is it expands it a little bit. The cottage food industry is a growing one. It's also been affectionately called the brownie bill in the past, where grandma makes her brownies and sells them to people like me, and then you end up looking like me. because that's my weakness. What this will do is it will empower people to supplement their incomes. It will allow them to supplement it even more, and what it'll do is it'll allow them to work from home. This will be an enormous benefit to people, single moms or single dads, retirees. This will be especially a blessing to people that are on low or fixed incomes. This has been done, and it's in practice around the country. There are some states that have greatly expanded on what's going on here. What we're trying to do doesn't come close to the other states, as we're trying to work with everybody involved here. And what I'm just trying to do is I'm just trying to bring this the current language up to a kind of a 21st century level. One of the things that people kind of initially assume right out of the gate is, and I want to address, is that no one's going to get rich doing this. At most, you know, when we sat down and we tried to figure out, you know, some kind of a reasonable ballpark target, and we figured that we put the cap, and as I explained the bill, we put the cap at $18,000 a year. That's gross. After taxes, it's about $12,000 a year. So most folks stand to make about $1,000 a month, so no one's going to get rich off this. I do have an amendment that I need to move in order to get the bill into the shape that we can move forward on this. And at this time, if we have a quorum, I would request that we do so. If not, I can continue to sit here and tell you about my addiction to sugar.
Thanks, Representative. We do have enough members here for a quorum, so we will take a look at the minutes for March 10th. And Representative Nornes, would you move the minutes for that day after you...
Mr. Chair, I'll move the minutes.
Representative Nornes... moves the minutes be approved for March 10th. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The minutes are approved. Thank you, Representative Nornes. Representative Neuberger, the amendment, do members have the amendment? I don't.
Mr. Chair, it's the A-15 amendment. I do have some copies here, I believe. I can give. Actually, I don't. I got a landfill amendment here, but that's not going to work for you.
Okay.
I can have copies made. I have one copy. If you promise not to lose it, I can have somebody.
Okay. Very good.
If you want to make some copies of that amendment was posted It was submitted before the 24-hour deadline, and it was accepted, so it must have just got lost somewhere in the electronic shuffle.
Okay.
And I do believe it's posted online.
Could you explain your amendment?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. My amendment does is there was some discussion about the amount of money that people could make doing this. There was some concern, especially in the smaller communities. So what we did is we decided that we would, with discussing this with the people in the industry, we've been working on this for 3 years, we decided we would kind of reduce the amount that people could make to, like I said, to roughly $1,000 a month net. That's kind of a ballpark figure. So that's one thing that we did. The other thing that we did is we kind of set up two levels. The first level of income that you can make, the first threshold is kind of it goes up to $8,000 a year. The requirements to be in this industry are few. They're good requirements, but if you make more than $8,000 a year, up to $18,000 a year, then you have to. There's a few more hoops you need to jump to. Some more accountability. Also, we wanted to add some elements of some safety to this, because that's always been one of the questions that's always come up, and folks, you know, rightfully so, they have issues. They say, "Well, how do we know how safe this food's going to be?" And overall, what we have done is we've built in kind of a safety mechanism that allows the Department of Health to have some input in this as well. We've had a lot of discussions, especially with folks on the farmers market side of things also. They are part of this equation, and I'll touch on them as we work through the bill as well. That's pretty much what it does. That's what my amendment will do. And it also clarifies, kind of sets the parameters up as to how the food can be sold. And my amendment will be coming around. Have you gotten it yet? It's going to have some of my chicken scratch on it, so just ignore that. That's pretty much what it will do. So,
thanks, Representative. Mm-hmm. Again, this is House File 910, and Representative Nornes, would you like to move that bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that House File 910 be referred to the Committee on Agriculture Finance.
Thank you, Representative. And we do have the amendment coming momentarily, we hope. And any questions by members on the bill, Representative Schultz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I've got information on potentially hazardous food by the Department of Agriculture. Could you explain a food that consists of raw seed sprouts?
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A food that would consist of raw seed sprouts. At this point, that's not a food that would be something that they would be able to. Something that would fall within the purview of the home food industry. We're basically looking at non-potentially hazardous food, and there is a list here that we have. It's baked goods, candies that don't contain potentially hazardous food, granolas and dry cereal, pastas, popcorn, waffle cones, those kind of things. The list is here, roasted coffee, those kind of things. The raw sprouts is something, if you look at the language, that is not, if that's considered a hazardous food, then that would not fall into this category.
And that wouldn't be in the granola or anything, the raw seed sprouts.
Representative Neuberger.
It's my it's the common understanding that granola is a cooked product. Every box of granola I know that I've ever eaten has always been kind of a dry box of overbaked gravel, so I don't really see. I mean, it's okay if you wash it down with a lot of root beer, but it's something I don't see. Representative, Mr. Chair, thank you. If someone put some raw seed sprouts in my granola, I think I'd have an uprising.
We do have the amendment. Thank you to our page and Representative Nornes. Would you care to move the A15 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that the A15-0163 amendment.
Very good. All in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, same sign. The amendment A15-0163 is approved. Further questions, Representative Schultz, did you get your... Okay. Representative
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought I heard you at least at one point mention net income as opposed to gross, and I don't know if it's sorted out in the amendment, but obviously there's a huge difference there between gross receipts and net income. So I don't know if it's sorted out in the amendment or not, but depending on the margin. But it's gross receipts here is what I see down in the amendment. So, but I'm assuming we're talking about receipts because that's a much easier way to codify that income as opposed to if you've got a tiny margin, you may have a huge amount of gross receipts and kind of like farming and just a sliver of actual net income. So I think this clears it up, Mr. Chair.
Is that correct, Representative?
That is correct, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
More questions on the bill as amended? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for bringing this bill up. I recall a similar issue last year, and I think you've narrowed it a little bit, and there were health concerns that I wasn't completely clear about, and which makes me think of a couple of things. One is, will this bill also go to HHS policy? Mr. Chair?
As far as I know, the answer would probably be no. It's going to go to Ag Finance next, so we can check on that in the interim.
Would it be appropriate for this to first go to HHS policy?
That was not my decision. But they did not appear to want it. We asked, and they did not get back to us that they wanted to hear it.
Okay. Then my next question is, will somebody from the health department be testifying on this?
They're not on the agenda to testify. I'm not sure if anybody in the audience would be from there. We'll have public testimony in just a minute.
Okay. But, I'll wait.
Okay. More questions from the committee members? If not, anybody in the audience who wishes to testify either for or against House File 910?
Mr. Chair, I do have some folks here from the public. If at this time, I believe Cecilia, okay. If she's here, if she'd like to testify, and then I believe we have one more here too.
Good morning. Welcome to the committee, and be brief with your comments and identify yourselves, and then begin your testimony.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Cecilia Coulter. I'm a board director with the Minnesota Farmers Market Association. And the MFMA is grateful to Representatives Neuberger and Kahn for drafting House File 910. And this bill addresses several issues of interest to both the farmers market community and the Minnesota consumer. Last year, the MFMA supported passage of the Farmers Market Safe Food Sampling Bill. Its cornerstone was training in safe food handling at farmers markets. HF 910 extends that training requirement to producers of non-potentially hazardous foods who wish to sell directly to the public. The MFMA supports the intent of HF 910, and we look forward to working with the bill author to tweak some of the technicalities. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you very much, Ms. Coulter. Questions? Next testifier.
Mr. Chair, I don't think I had any more. If there was, it's... Oh, we do. We have one.
Okay. Come on down. Welcome. Again, we're hearing testimony from the public on House File 910. Good morning, and tell us who you are for the record and then begin your testimony.
I will.
Thank you.
My name is Connie David, and I first of all would like to thank you for letting me speak today in favor of Bill HF 910. I would, however, like to offer a couple of changes. Passing a bill that would allow me to sell potentially non-hazardous foods from my home kitchen directly to the consumer will allow me to make some much-needed income. I believe that each individual who wants to sell under this exemption should be required to complete and pass a food safety course. The amount of money that I am allowed to make has no bearing on the safety of my goods. Being properly educated in this area is a sensible requirement toward public safety. And as a former teacher, I understand the value of education, and I'm sure all of you do as well. Including a list of potentially non-hazardous foods is helpful, but I would like to suggest two changes. Baked goods and candy that do not contain potentially hazardous foods would eliminate many of my delicious treats. It is common to use an ingredient that is defined as a potentially hazardous food, such as eggs or milk, and process a baked good into a non-potentially hazardous food with safe pH and water activity levels. It is more accurate to define baked goods and candy as without meat fillings or cream fillings. When it comes to preparing foods in a kitchen that is not licensed or inspected, I believe that in addition to the name, address, and disclaimer that appear on a food label, we should also require a list of ingredients and a list of possible allergens. How much money I am allowed to make is not the interesting piece to this bill. I mean, you know, $18,000 would be very helpful to me. But please don't let this bill sputter over dollars. Passing an updated bill like this matters greatly to me. Minnesota can join more than almost 36 other states that allow cottage food. I can't read my own writing. Cottage food operations.
Doing very well.
From home, and we can do it safely. Please let me start baking and making some dough.
Thank you, Ms. David.
And thank you.
Representative Neuberger was shaking his head in the affirmative at some of your comments,
yes,
so
I'm
sure he was listening. question from Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair. Actually, this may be more of a comment than a question, but and I noticed one of my constituents, Kathy Zeman, approach, she didn't comment, but I have for a number of years in the city of Northfield that we've had a event called the River Walk Market Fair, which happens from October until, it happens from, I think it's May to October. So it's a event that allows farmers and artists to sell their goods on in the fair. And I know that there are folks who have managed to find a commercial kitchen to bake goods and sell, but I know that there are others who would do a good job, and it's a delicate balance to make sure that the things that are in this kind of farmer's market or market fair is healthy and secure. And I think the comments made by the most recent testifier were very good, and I think this has been years in compromise and trying to make things work, and appreciated her comments about the education part of it, and also the labeling, I think, is really important. So I really appreciate your comments about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to the testifier, because I think I had some questions, too, about the potentially hazardous food concept, and I realize that it's maybe coming from the not potentially hazardous food, but I know I have a nephew who's extremely allergic to peanuts, and having nuts and access to nuts and you know, just whatever in a kitchen that you don't really know if, you know, previously you might have had nuts that you used for something, but now you didn't, and whatever. So I'm just wondering about trying to figure out if there is a different way to address that in the bill, and again, the testifier talking about having the list of ingredients. I thought that seemed like an appropriate response.
Representative Neuberger.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And Representative Poppy, that's an excellent question. And in the bill, in the language, what we have here, it's a couple quick lines that do address this. And I will say this beforehand, if this is not satisfactory, I'm more than happy to work with people to iron out these wrinkles. Basically, what the language says here is if the food is not prepared in a kitchen that is licensed or inspected, the seller must post a visible sign or placard stating
quote, that these products are homemade and not subject to state inspection, end quote. Prepared foods sold under this subdivision must be labeled, to accurately reflect the name and the address of the person preparing and selling the foods, and, you see the new language there, include a list of all ingredients and possible allergens. So we were able to cover that base, I hope, satisfactorily to everyone's to everyone here, and then also with the health consideration, because that is a concern. Now we're not gonna deny that, but we also need that not to eclipse the issue here. So we did address that in the amendment here. We have the language that says in cases, well, an individual who has we got the gross receipts language here. But they're also going to be required to take a food safety course. It shall not exceed more than 4 hours in length. And we came up with the four-hour period of time. That's based primarily on my own experience. I spent 7 years in the food industry cooking in restaurants, and I've been through all of the food safety programs and the training that's out there in the industry today. And I'm kind of a germ freak. You mix that with the paramedic in me, and it's, yeah, so I'm very cognizant of germs, and I don't like them. But we wanted to make sure that there was a reasonable course that people could take that could be offered either online or by other means, like as a direct classroom experience or a correspondence experience. The course, we, at this point in the language, is no more than $40, because what we're trying to do is help low-income people. And we don't want to exclude anybody and make it out of reach. So $40 was the limit that we put on the course. And that's kind of an industry standard. If you go onto any online program, if you pay more than $40, you're getting ripped off. We have included here, in cases of if the new language on the amendment, if you look above my chicken scratch on the bottom, on line 1.20, it says, in cases of suspect foodborne illness, established by the Department of Health, guidelines shall be followed. Inspections shall only be in the areas directly involved in the preparation and the storage of the food in question. And then all inspections shall be done with a 24-hour advance notice to the food preparer. That was one that we worked on a fair amount. We wanted to make sure that, just because your basement's a mess doesn't mean your kitchen is. Okay. So if there is ever an issue, they can absolutely look. If there's a suspect issue, they can come and inspect those areas that would fall within the purview. The 24-hour notice, because this is a home-based industry, we didn't want to make this something that would compete with grocery stores and restaurants who are operating on truly a different level. We also wanted to find that balance between the public safety component and the property rights of owners. So what we didn't want to do was set up an environment where the Department of Health could just come and knock on your door at 4:45 in the evening when you're trying to get dinner on the table for your kids and say, oh, by the way, we're here to inspect your home. Okay, we had to find some kind of a balance there, and we thought that was reasonable if 24 hours was short enough, was a short enough time frame. And myself, speaking of my own experience in the restaurant industry, that worked. So,
further questions, Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And since we don't have the Department of Health here, I am wondering if the Department of Ag is going to come down and maybe talk about, or if the Department of Health is here. Okay, maybe I might want both the Health Department and the Ag Department just to come forward to talk about their take on the bill.
Welcome. Identify yourself and begin your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is April Bogart. I'm a supervisor in the food, pools, and lodging section at the Department of Health. We do have some concerns about paragraph G in the amended language, the language that we just talked about regarding the 24-hour notice. The department has a lot of experience investigating foodborne outbreaks, and we've found over the years that timely investigations are the most successful investigations. The longer we wait to start an investigation, the more recall bias we have. People tend to forget things as time goes on. And sometimes it takes a while before we even know that there's a problem. And so the more time that passes, the more difficult it is for us to really determine what happened. in a situation where we need to, we may need to take samples either of the environment or of the food or from people, the more time that passes, the less successful we are in getting samples to the lab. So the department does have some concerns about that language. We have been working with Minnesota Farmers Market Association and Representative Neuberger on some language, and we hope to have that available for the Ag Finance Committee.
Very good. Thank you, ma'am. Questions? You. Department of Ag was also going to come down, I believe. We do have six additional bills today, members. We may be coming back this evening. Good morning. No pressure. No pressure.
For the record, Mr. Chair, Santa Cruz, Minnesota Department of Ag. Full disclosure, Cecilia Coulter is a good friend of mine, so I'm completely biased on this bill. I would say this. We have a minor concern. I think it can be worked out. I think under, and I don't know what the amendment was, but section 1.2 to 1.24, as you can see, I'm reading someone else's writing. Could possibly limit our authority under 31 and 34A, and this is regarding delivery. So if you make it at home, then the presumption or our preference would be that you also are the person that delivers it to any of your customers, and that way we have a one point of contact rather than saying, okay, who did you go with this time? Is it UPS? Where is it? It's a logistical matter. But we'll continue to work with the author on this bill. We have a friendly position. I would say that it is not an agency bill, obviously, so we don't have a rock-solid opposition or support. And in the interest of time, that'll be my comments today.
Thank you, Mr. Santo. There are further questions, testimony? Representative Lewick.
Mr. Chair, just a quick comment. We got to be careful here, and in the interest of being perfect, let's not slow this thing down. I come from a county that's got delegated food and beverage inspection licensing, that whole process, and our farmers markets labor under a huge, I won't say confusion, but concern of what can they do, what can't they do, relative particularly to something like, you know, bringing a pan of brownies alongside your fruits and vegetables. So let's not nitpick this thing to death. It's a long time coming. There's a lot of people out there that are looking for it. So let's fix the things and move it on, please.
Final comments, Representative Neuberger.
None at this time, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank the members for their time, and I recommend that you move this to its next logical stop.
And you're amenable to working with people, correct?
Oh, absolutely.
Representative Nornes, would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I renew my motion that House File 910 as amended be referred to, re-referred to the Committee on Agriculture Finance.
As per Representative Nornes's motion to re-refer the bill 910 to the Committee on Ag Finance, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
And opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Next bill on the agenda is House File 1377, and Representative Rarick, would you like to move the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that House File 1377 be re-referred to the Committee on Ag Finance.
Representative Pearson, welcome to the committee, and let's hear about your bill, House File 1377.
Thank you, and good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Representative Nels Pearson. And I was going to just give the testimony by saying, asking the question, got milk, and drop the mic and walk away. But under direction of others, they thought that would be a bad idea. So we're going to give you a little more information than that. So got milk, some of your neighbors don't. And that's what this bill is all about. I'm here this morning. I'm going to be introducing Laurel Fedema. And we're going to be talking about the second harvest efforts, and basically the legislature currently has appropriated to the Minnesota Department of Agriculture $1 million in the past bienniums for six of our food banks across the state of Minnesota, and providing a full range of nutritious food is an ongoing challenge for food banks. And milk is highly requested, but it's very rarely donated. And so this is an important program for those who are seeking good, nutritious diet needs. So that's what this program had been developed for. Unfortunately, the current program has far greater demands and stronger capacity. And I'll introduce Laurel and have her speak to that.
Good morning, ma'am. State your name again and begin your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Laurel Fetima. I'm with Second Harvest Heartland. I'd also like to introduce today Rob Zeski, the CEO of Second Harvest Heartland, and Tony Manns, also from Second Harvest Heartland.
Go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. We'd like to talk a little bit about the milk grant. This has been something appropriated through the Minnesota Department of Agriculture for a number of past bienniums for the six Feeding America food banks serving Minnesota. So I just want to clarify that what we're going to talk about today, while it might be called the Second Harvest Heartland Bill, we're really presenting today on behalf of all of our food bank peers across the state, covering the entire state, not just Second Harvest territory. The need for milk in Minnesota's food shelves far exceeds the current grant appropriation of $500,000 per year. It's a hugely requested item at food shelves because of its nutrition. We know that it's incredibly popular with children and seniors, so parents that come to the food shelves, high demand for seniors as well. We serve about 10% seniors at food shelves across the state, and about 33% of those served at food shelves across the state are children. Because this desirable item is very expensive, it tends to be prohibitively so for low-income families visiting food shelves. So maintaining the $1 million biennium grant right now covers about 31% of the need, as we're able to measure it through the system. And so we're here today to ask for some additional dollars to cover more of that need. And Rob's going to talk a little bit about the need and what hunger's looking like just very, very briefly.
Thank you. I was only going to speak to the current state of hunger in Minnesota very quickly. And just
could we get your name again?
Absolutely. My name is Rob Zeski. Hey. I'm the CEO of Second Harvest Heartland. As we continue to see fantastic news in the newspapers and on media about the falling unemployment rates, the rising stock market prices, and kind of surging economy, we continue to find that in Minnesota we are operating and have a story of two economies, one that is doing very well, but we continue to see record need at food shelves that we serve. Second Harvest Heartland serves now nearly 1,000 local partners. Those are the retailers, food shelves, soup kitchens, meal programs, and the food banks provide roughly 75% of the food to those agencies, really on the front lines of supporting our neighbors in need. So even though we see a very positive story in many components of our economy, this past year in 2014, we pushed into record territory, showing double-digit increases of food shelf visits among households compared to 2013. So we continue to see a strong demand. Nearly 600,000 people in Minnesota, households, turned to food shelves to get help with their food needs. 1 in 10 Minnesotans is struggling to find food on a regular basis, and so we can still consider very strong demand. In addition to this as a challenge for our humanity and human potential, through work with the University of Minnesota's Food Industry Center, we also understand that we spend, as a state, roughly $1.2 billion every year on preventable downstream costs from food insecurity and from hunger, primarily related to health issues. We know that in Minnesota, while we have a 7% adult diabetes rate, among those people that we serve, 35% are households that have a diabetic household member. The hypertension rates are roughly 44%, well above the norm for most of those that are food secure in the state of Minnesota. So as we face record demand and growing demand, and we continue to see strong nutritional challenges, we continue to believe that the milk program is one of those fantastic opportunities for us to be able to deliver a program that is highly, highly valued for its nutritional content, particularly when over 40-45% of the neighbors we serve are either children or seniors. This is a particularly important diet piece. So we are enthusiastic about the committee's consideration for expanding this program to meet current needs.
Thanks, Mr. Zeski. Any questions from committee members? Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the testifiers for bringing forth this bill. I do have a question, though. You said this would meet, or currently you're meeting about 31% of the need. are you meeting 100% of the need, or is the state just providing the money that takes care of the 31%? How do you actually, how is that being taken care of?
Mr. Zeski, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Currently, once the milk grant runs out, and it typically there is strong demand during the first part of the year, we will continue to offer milk at market rates, essentially. But the demand falls considerably once the agencies have to put additional dollars in. There's just not enough money to go around for this relative to some of the other needs that they have, including produce, protein, and other things. So that typically drops off precipitously once the state milk grant goes out, and so does the utilization and volume of milk in the system.
Representative Pompey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know in the Second Harvest Heartland, you know, you have a matching funds often by private companies or organizations that are helping to support. And so is the milk also done that same way, that you have some funds that are brought in from private organizations to assist?
Mm-hmm. Representative Mr. Zeski.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. For most of the product that we distribute, most of the funds go to support the transportation, logistics, storage, warehousing, and so most of the matching goes into that, where the cost of the goods is typically almost nothing because it's donated product. And that's the case certainly with the state milk grants. So the dollars we get go to match to move the food around the state. We do not have a similar donation program for milk, in that typically that is not a item that is easy to donate. The milk producers are very good at reworking the milk product, and the products that we do get are typically very close to code date, and that is a challenge for us with milk in particular. Or we get it in either sizes. We were just discussing kind of 5-gallon drums of buttermilk are things that we might get donated and are not as easy for our consumers to use. So typically, we do not have donations of milk in the same way that we do for others, and so the match doesn't work quite the same. And that is why this is a particularly important piece of legislation and product for us.
This is an excellent program, and delivering an excellent product to people all across Minnesota. So thanks, Representative Nielsen, for bringing us a bill. Any more questions from members of the audience, of the committee, and audience members as well, either for or against the bill? If not, closing comments, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee, for hearing the bill. And my only regret is it's not my first bill, so I couldn't bring ice cream for you guys. I'm so sorry.
Well, you still could have.
But thank you again, and I hope that this will move forward.
Representative Rarick, would you like to renew your motion?
I renew my motion that House File 1377 be referred to the Committee on Ag Finance.
Again, you heard the motion, House File 1377 to be referred to the Committee on Ag Finance. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails.
No problem. Now, it's the first committee. It's your first presentation to our committee. That's what I was told. I didn't know that either.
Well, we can always make up for that. Yeah. We're gonna move down in the agenda to Representative Nornes and House File 167. With Representative Hansen on deck. House File 167, Representative Nornes, would you care to move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that House File 167 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Representative Nornes, present your bill.
I did ask a page to reproduce a piece of paper. I don't know if it's ready yet or not.
Yes.
We can proceed without it, but
I'm not so sure we have that.
Okay, that's fine.
Let's check. Is it coming? Okay very good.
Okay.
Our pages are very good.
Yeah.
But go ahead and let's begin talking about your bill.
We'll maybe be finished with this bill before it comes back, and that's just fine.
Here it comes.
Yeah. Oh,
thanks to our pages this morning. It's a busy agenda, and you're doing a great job. Thanks.
Oh, I see. We've copied more pages than we need here, but that's fine. Better to be thorough. House File 167... is just a simple bill that tries to exempt one more piece of production farming, I guess you'd say, from taxes. This piece of paper that you're receiving up, the second page really lists all of the exempt items when it comes to farming. And the one thing that isn't on the list is drain tile. Drain tile is used to improve the productivity of farms, particularly down in my area and also down in Wilkin County, other places that have extremely valuable and excellent farmland, but it also has a tendency to flood and get wet. And the tile helps to, again, helps to make that land more productive in certain seasons when we do have a lot of water. This spring doesn't look like it's going to be an issue unless something drastic happens. And the bill is also brought to you by a young farmer that grew up next to me. He kind of inherited the farm when his dad passed away from cancer, and he's developed into a very productive, very good farmer. And so he thinks this is something that's very important, not only him, but to other farmers that have situations where they need to have some drain tile. The bill excludes drain tile used for public systems or for residential systems. Strictly, it's limited to just farm use. This bill would be effective as of this the end of June or 1st of July of this year. So it does not, it's not retroactive to any tile that's been purchased currently. It's interesting when you look on the list of exempted items, the tile plows that you put the tile on the ground with are exempt from sales tax, but not the tile. So, Mr. Chair, that basically is the bill. And it'll also have to impress the tax committee, I understand.
I would agree that sometimes it's a bit confusing as to what is exempt and what is not exempt, especially in farm implement dealers selling parts and things, that it can be very confusing.
Right.
Your bill attempts to look at one additional piece of that puzzle. Questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, anybody in the audience who would care to testify in favor of or against the bill? Seeing none, Representative Nornes, final comments on your bill.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to present it to the Ag Committee, and if you have anybody in the Tax Committee that you know, put in a good word for me, okay?
Would you care to renew your motion?
I do. Renew my motion that House File 167 be referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Representative Nornes renews his motion House File 167 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. Next bill up, Representative Hansen. It is House File 577. And Representative Schultz, would you care to move House File 577.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that this bill be put in front of the committee.
Very good. Representative Hansen, welcome, and let's hear about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 577 deals with the internet sales of restricted-use pesticides, and maybe a little bit of background. This is the area I used to work in at the Department of Agriculture. If you are a farmer who is using a restricted-use pesticide, you have to be certified. That is a combination process between the Department of Agriculture and the University of Minnesota Extension Service to determine competency to use, minimum competency to use restricted-use pesticides. With changes in commerce over time, there are now internet sales of pesticides, and it is the concern is that people may be able to purchase restricted-use pesticides online without that verification. So there is the existing law that says you may not purchase a restricted-use pesticide without license or certification. This clarifies, it kind of brings the old law up into a current world where it explicitly prohibits the internet sales. And just to let you know where this came from, there is a constituent citizen who, there was a bee kill in Minneapolis, brought this to Senator Dibble, and Senator Dibble provided me with the House jackets I believe there are some folks who would testify on this. And I did talk with the Department of Agriculture, and I know they're here as well.
Okay. Thanks, Representative. Questions from members? Anybody in the audience who would care to testify on the bill? Department of Ag is coming down. I think maybe clarify if a current statute covers what we're trying to do here, or if this new statute is needed.
Mr. Chair, Sandra Cruz, Minnesota Department of Agriculture, we support this legislation. We think that it highlights what's implicit in the law, so we certainly would go after any violation of the current law, which this would encompass. But by drawing this out, what we think this does is put the companies that are violating the law on the Internet on notice, as well as people who may be trying to violate the law over the Internet, thinking, well, this is kind of an unregulated no man's land, on notice that that is not the case. So we would welcome this.
Okay. Any other testimony? And I would assume that Internet sales are becoming maybe more and more part of the practice of purchasing chemicals. Representative Hansen, any closing comments on your bill?
Well, Mr. Chair, I want to thank you for giving me a hearing. This is the only bill I've gotten heard so far this year, so I appreciate that opportunity and welcome the committee's consideration.
And we can't ask for treats. So. And there is a letter in your packets that came in late. We got it copied for your information from Pollinate, Minnesota, pertaining to this bill and support. So, Representative Schultz, would you like to renew your motion?
Sure, I renew my motion.
Okay, House File 577 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Policy Bill. Thanks, Representative Hansen.
Thank you.
And as we continue shuffling papers here, next up, Representative Poppy. House File 1051. Representative Poppy, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 1051 be referred to the Committee on Higher Education Policy and Finance.
Go ahead. Let's hear about your bill.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I gave a presentation of the bill last week, and if you weren't here, you missed it. But it's a great bill, but it does have a little bit of changes that I'd like to make, and that I have an amendment. So the House File 1051 A1 amendment.
And we do have this one. We think.
Yes, it was in my packet, so I'm hoping it was in everyone's packet.
I am not finding it in mine. Okay, thank you. Would you care to move?
I would like to move the 1051 A1 amendment, please.
Okay. Any discussion on the amendment? If not, all in favor of the H1051A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. To your amendment, your
thank
bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so the amendment, just I can walk through what it does. The first section, subdivision 2, there was some discussion about that. I think there was whether or not it should come from agri-funds and other things, and that's one that we're just deleting. So we're not going to address that anymore, subdivision 2, but we are going to keep section 2, subdivision 4, which is the sunset for the agri-fund, so it extends it out to 2025. We also just are clearing up the language a little bit on page 2, which is the language regarding the developing the courses. This, I think, addresses the issue that I had heard about with the farm business management. So it's to say that they will develop, that the farm business management instructors are the ones that will develop and teach online ag courses. And it's so you can read on 1.3 to 1.5 on the amendment how that would change. Just, I think, clears up the language, clarifies that. Page 2, line 4, then that's just deleted. So anyway, that's how that's going to be corrected. Section 6, we were adding the farm business management tuition scholarships. That's being added in. That was, I believe, in Representative Marquardt's bill, so we're taking language from there to add to this, and Section 7 as well.
And we appreciate you working together to come up with one bill that's even better.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. But so those are the changes, and I would like to see this bill continue on its path and go to the Committee on Higher Ed Policy and Finance, and I think it's in good shape, but I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions from members? Anybody in the audience who'd care to testify on the bill? Seeing none, final comments, Representative Poppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to have the bill heard, have this opportunity to be able to pass it along to the next committee, and I'd appreciate your support.
Representative Poppe renews her motion that House File 1051, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Higher Education Policy and Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
And moving right along, I think, are my bills up? Okay. Vice Chair?
The next bill on the agenda is House File 879. Representative Anderson, would you like to move your bill?
We're going to just bring it back up again. We heard testimony the other day, so.
Yes.
I do have an amendment to House File 879, just a one-word amendment, if I could be permitted to offer that.
Well, Representative Anderson, you still need to move your bill to go to education policy.
I would certainly do that, Madam Chair.
Okay, now you can move your amendment.
And page 1, line 9, just strike the word extension and insert the word extended. Strike the word extension and insert the word extended, E-X-T-E-N-D-E-D.
Madam Chair and members, the amendment is on page 1. Line 8, I believe, of House File 879.
Okay.
Delete the word extension and insert extended. So it would read summer with high school students and extended programs.
All right. Does everybody understand the oral amendment? Representative Anderson moves to strike the word extension and insert extended at page 1, line 8. All those in favor, say
aye.
Aye. All right.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. Testimony was taken on this bill last week. Is there any further discussion on House File 879 as amended? Representative Anderson renews his motion that House File 879 as amendment be re-referred to the Committee on Education Innovation Policy. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say nay. All right, the motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
All right, the next bill on the agenda is House File 1554. Representative Anderson, would you like to move your bill to put it before the committee?
I would like to move my bill, Madam Chair, House File 1554.
Representative Anderson, is there an amendment? And would you like to move your amendment at this time?
Madam Chair, yes, there's an amendment, quota the H1554A1 amendment, Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson moves the H1554A1 amendment. Is there any discussion to the amendment? All those in favor of H1554A1 amendment say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. The motion prevails. Representative Anderson, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have the department here to go over the bill. It's the department policy bill for the year. And when we finish, we'll just talk about some of the procedural moves for the bill. It's going to be delete all amendments to be posted by the close of business on Friday. But we'll talk about that when we finish going over the bill. So thank you.
Madam Chair, Santo Cruz, Minnesota Department of Agriculture, for the record. First, we'd like to thank Chair Anderson for carrying our bill. We really appreciate that. And been working very well on getting some of the kinks ironed out. We've got a pretty thin bill as far as agency policy bills go this year, and it'll get a little bit thinner before this Friday. We will be removing some of the technical provisions in, I think it's entitled Clarify Inspection Documentation, so we won't be covering that today because we'll be amending that out.
Mr. Cruz, could you tell the body what section that is on?
Madam Chair, you can't ask me that question on the spot. It's on page 6 from basically line 6.19 to 6.12. That'll be deleted out. And there'll be other technical changes. We've got a few typos in here. On page 11, we'll be striking some of the typos there and inclusions in the seed provision. So my goal today is to just have the different divisions walk through the rationale very, very, very quickly, why we're presenting these particular changes or fixes within our current statute. And I'll kind of kick things off with our Ag BMP loan program. And I have for you all, I know how much you love to have more brochures in your packets, so I brought along a lot of brochures today on the Ag BMP loan program and some of its successes. Basically, this is being brought forward by resolution from the SWCD. So the proposal is to increase the Ag BMP loan amount under Chapter 17.117 from $100,000 to $200,000. So why isn't this in our finance bill? Well, the fund itself has the funds to do this. We would basically be asking this committee's permission and the legislature's permission to raise it up to the 200,000 level. Why would that be? The program provides low-cost financial financing to farmers, farm suppliers, and rural landowners to implement best management practices that improve water quality. Qualifying loans may be made for feedlot improvements, manure storage basins, and spreading equipment, conservation tillage equipment, terraces, waterways, and sediment basins, shore and river stabilization and septic systems. Other projects that improve water quality also qualify. So the reason for this request is the cost of the eligible projects continue to increase, and in recent years, counties and participating lenders have requested that maximums be increased. The Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts, by resolution of its members, requested that MDA develop this legislative initiative. The 2006 legislature increased the loan cap to $100,000 and authorized a 10-year term. The loan terms would be $200,000 up to the term of 10 years at 3% interest rates. Over the years, the program has built a revolving loan fund such that the agency has been able to fund all eligible requests that qualify for applicants. The higher loan limits would not reduce the number of loans we close out, so we wouldn't be serving less people. The staff would stay the same, and the administrative costs would remain the same. We are adding no FTEs, and there is no added cost to the agency. So we think it's a pretty, as resolutions go, this one's got broad support, and we would ask for yours. At this time, I would ask the Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division to come down and review for you all some of their policy changes. After that, we will have our seed division come down, and Gear for Zoe will be taking that over from Plant Protection Division, and then finally Nikki Neeser from our Dairy and Food Division, and then we will basically amend anything we need to for this Friday and get it all in voting shape for next week.
Thank you, Mr. Cruz. Please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is Joe Spitzmuller. I'm a manager at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture in the Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division.
Please continue, Mr. Spitzmuller.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be going section by section through portions of this proposal. And I'll start with Section 1, which begins on line 1.14. This section is entitled a Permit Efficiency Report. The department is required to submit semi-annual permitting efficiency reports. This proposal changes that requirement to an annual report. The change reduces some of the administrative efforts to create two reports annually and creates efficiencies for the agency. So essentially, we are asking that the report be an annual report as opposed to a semi-annual report. I'll move to Section 3 and Section 4. Section 3 begins on line 2.32, and Section 4 begins on line 3.30. These changes refer to pesticide application records. Pesticide application records are documents that provide important information about pesticide application. This proposal modifies the record-keeping requirements. It changes some of the formatting and content requirements currently in the statute. It establishes a completion deadline for applicators, and it adds a posting requirement aimed at improving public awareness about pesticide use. So this change will promote greater use of electronic records, establish clear deadlines for applicators, and promote awareness about pesticide use among residents of multi-unit dwellings as well as users of public properties. I'll move to Section 5 and Section 7. Section 5 begins on line 4.25, and sections...
Mr. Spitzmuller, Representative Bly has a question.
Sure.
Thank you, Chair and testifier. You mentioned about the posting of pesticide use or so that neighbors, for instance, might know about it. Where is that posted, and is there any possibility of having, I mean, perhaps technology exists to let people know that an application is either just happened or about to happen so that they can be prepared for that, or is that a possibility?
Mr. Spitzmuller.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. Currently, records are given to the customers. So a customer will hire a pesticide applicator. It could be a commercial applicator or a structural applicator. They will hire them to provide the service of applying pesticide on the use of their property. That might be to control weeds in their yard or garden, or that might be to control a pest within a home. That those are the sorts of situations that would create such a record. Currently, a record is provided by the applicator to the customer. What this provision does is, but in a case of a multi-unit residence, for example, the customer will be the landlord, for example, won't necessarily be the resident of the property. So what this provision is attempting to do is to create a posting so that the resident of the property will be made aware that an application was made to the property. Otherwise, they may not be aware that such an application was made. That's the intent of this provision.
And Representative Anderson has a question.
Well, just a clarification, ma'am. I'd like to ask, dealing with the Section 3, line 2.33, talking about commercial and non-commercial, is non-commercial the same as a private applicator?
All right, Mr. Spitzmuller.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. A non-commercial is not the same as a private.
Okay,
Mr. Spitzmuller, you want to continue?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'll be moving on to Sections 5 and Section 7. Section 5 begins on line 4.25, and section 7 begins on line 5.14. Section 5 deals with the pesticide law. Section 7 deals with the fertilizer law. And essentially what we're doing in this proposal is aligning incident response plans. So response plans and other emergency preparedness are critical protections for workers, the public, and our environment from accidents, spills, and other incidents that result in agricultural chemical releases. This proposal establishes a protocol for maintaining a plan, reviewing it with employees, and sharing it with first responders. This plan unifies response plan language, describes specifications, which will improve the usefulness of incident response plans.
All right, Mr. Smith-Miller, you want to continue?
Then I'll move on to Section 8, which begins on line 5.32. And this section deals with the discontinuation of fertilizer products in the marketplace. So currently, when a pesticide fertilizer registration ends, all sales must stop. Now, distributors of these products don't always know where their products are being sold. And when they cancel a product, it oftentimes leaves a retailer in a lurch. So that retailer may be caught unaware that the product cannot be legally sold. This proposal establishes a mandatory 2-year discontinuation period, after which the department is notified that a product will no longer be renewed. This 2-year period enables the dealer to continue selling the product and eliminating it from the channels of trade. So this provision replicates language that already exists in the pesticide law, which has been successful at reducing the number of unregistered pesticides in the channels of trade and marketed in the state.
Thank you, Mr. Spitzmuller. Does anybody have any questions up to this point? Seeing none, you may continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Section 9 was one of the sections that Mr. Cruz referred to earlier. This will be a section deleted from the bill, so I won't be talking about this section.
Mr. Spitzmuller, go ahead and continue.
I think that concludes. Okay. That concludes my remarks, Madam Chair.
All right. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Spitzmuller? Seeing none, thank you for your time, sir. Next up, we have Mr. Frizzo from the Department of Agriculture. Please state your name for the record, sir.
Thank you. I'm Geer Frizzo. I'm the Director of Plant Protection Division with Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And my...
Mr. Frizzo.
Thank you. So my piece starts on page 6, so it's section number 10. And line 6.28, this is a fairly minor change to just clarify that when we're asking for address, that we need a full, complete address, not simply the city and state. Under section 11, line 7.1, we've added a new definition regarding a viable seed. This brings us in more consistent with national standards for how seed is defined. Section 12.
And Mr. Frizzo, could you please state what section you were referring to previously?
I'm sorry, that was section 11, line 7.1.
Okay.
Then moving on to section 12, beginning with line 8.15. Again, this is a rewording how a total viable seed is. It actually simplifies the labeling requirements for seed labelers. Moving on to section 13, beginning with line 8.28. This is a rewording how the accuracy of corn maturity claims are stated, and it's based on Minnesota Ag Experiment Station data. It's also moving language that's currently in rule into statute, so it's really not changing the requirements so much as moving from rule to statute. The next section is section 14, line 9.1. This is intended to clarify our rules for testing seed, and that we're using national standards for rules or for testing seed. Section 15, beginning with line 9.9, this allows the commissioner to designate which seeds are defined as prohibited and restricted. And currently, the noxious weed law allows the commissioner to designate noxious weeds, and the seed law requires it to be done by rulemaking, which takes considerably more time. So this harmonizes the two statutes to allow the commissioner to make those changes. The next section 16 deals with an area that I should mention that the majority of our seed section we have had long discussions with the seed advisory committee. We recently became aware of a situation with seed libraries, and we drafted this language relatively late, so it has not been fully vetted with our seed advisory committee. And I believe Mr. Cruz may speak to this further, but this section is a piece that's still in some flux, so I'm not sure if I should say anything more about it. With that, maybe I'll just skip on then to probably the primary piece, which is sections 18 and 19, beginning with line 11.14, and this deals with our fee structure. So on line 10.32, we are changing the definition of a seed labeler. This is called a category B. What we're adding is that labelers who sell native grasses and wildflower seeds in commercial or agricultural quantities. So these are people who are providing seed for like CRP or for roadwork sorts of projects would be classified in this section. And then beginning with section 18, and then beginning with line 11.21, you can see we've changed the proposed fee. This is for what's called our category A, from $50 to $75. Dropping down to line 1125 through 1129, you can see this is our what's called our category B fees. And you see the changes in the proposed fees there. And then lastly, we're probably 80% of our permits are in this third category, beginning in on line 11.33. And these are the large commercial labelers. And then beginning on line 12.4, these are the different categories. One significant change to these categories is in the past, all the registration fees has been based on hundredweight. And the seed industry for a lot of crops has changed to unit seed count. So this change proposes to change soybeans, sugar beets, and corn to being based on seed unit count versus a hundredweight, and that's much more in keeping with how the industry does business. And then lastly, section 19 on line 13.2, we are proposing the brand name registration fee change from $25 to $50. And so that concludes my section.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Frizzo. And Representative Anderson, do you have some comments? Oh, Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering, on line 12.5, you have not deleted soybeans, and you still have those at an increase 12 cents per hundred weight, but then you have 12.10 added soybeans. Is that an oversight? Is that intended?
Mr. Frizzo.
Madam Chair, Representative, you're correct. That is a correction that we need to. We just noticed that just very recently ourselves. So the intent is to remove it from line 12.5.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this may be to Representative Anderson. I mean, is that something you want to take care of today, or would you just prefer to wait and have a fuller amendment prepared?
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Poppy, I would prefer to wait. Okay. We're going to be doing some more work on the bill, and we can do those changes in the delete all amendment. But thank you.
All right. Any further questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question on page 8, the paragraph at the beginning of line 25, talking about the maturity ratings of seed corn having to be closely matched to that of the university. Does the university check all varieties, and then you say Minnesota Experiment Station, don't specify which one. Again, we have different maturities throughout the state. How would you handle that?
Mr. Frizzo.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative, the university is checking various varieties. I don't believe they do every single variety every single year, but they are they do a great job of tracking those varieties. And the current system is based on sort of outdated maturity maps for the state. And so this is a much more real-time a way of looking at those.
All right. Any further questions for Mr. Frizzo? Seeing none, thank you for your time here today, sir. Next up we have Dr. Nikki Kneeser. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Dr. Nikki Kneeser, and I'm a manager with the Dairy and Food Inspection Division at the Department of Agriculture. And I'm going to speak to Section 20, which begins on line 13.4. Section 20 deals with 34A11, the Dairy and Food Inspection Department has our embargo, seizure, and condemnation authority. Change seeks to add to this authority basically two words you'll see throughout this section is the addition of the word equipment and facility. Currently the department uses embargoes as a tool for holding potentially contaminated food or something that we suspect might be contaminated that we want to do further investigation on out of the market until we're able to get more information or make a determination. And this change simply adds to that the ability to hold or retain essentially a piece of equipment or an entire room or something in the facility. Most often this would be used if we encounter a piece of dirty processing equipment that we want to make sure isn't used again until it's cleaned, and so we can use this embargo authority in that way.
Thank you, Dr. Kneeser. Does anybody have any questions for Dr. Kneeser? Seeing none, thank you for your time here today. Appreciate it. Representative Anderson, do you have any?
I have a phone friend here.
Mr. Cruz, please state your name for the record.
Santa Cruz, Department of Ag, Madam Chair, back for hopefully the last time today. What I would like to say about the seed labeling component with seed exchanges that Mr. Frizzo mentioned, there are a number of different seed library groups the department has met with, many, I would say all of them, but every time I say that, another one comes and says, you haven't talked to me. So I will say, anybody who's come forward, we have met with them. And with regard to industry seed representatives, the same goes for any of their concerns. We've met with both groups individually. Our intention is between now and next Wednesday to get all of them in a room, either physically or through a conference call, and move forward one amendment on that particular part of our bill so that we have an accommodation for interpersonal sharing that's common sense that we can all support, as well as the sideboards the industry needs to make sure that seed integrity is preserved and their commercial expectations are being met. So that's all I would have to say.
Representative Cruz, or I'm sorry, gosh, Mr. Cruz.
I just got a promotion.
You did. Gosh, I don't know if you want that one.
I hope the record didn't pick up what Representative Anderson just said.
Would your amendment help with neighbors that may swap seeds as well, or would they not be part of this?
Madam Chair and members, or I would say this. I would say that I think to that particular point, you know, sharing seeds across the fence, quite frankly, you know, we don't have enough, as you saw from our budget request, enough people to do what our mandate currently is. We won't be hitting anybody's backyard anytime this millennium, but there is a certain amount of comfort with that the industry and the seed libraries would like. So I would say with regard to that, if this bill, if that provision were to pass, and we didn't have it in law that, you know, sharing your pumpkin seeds across the fence was somehow exempted from the seed requirements, would they, would the Department of Ag get involved in that level of interpersonal sharing? The answer is no. I just can't see a scenario where we would do that. However, given the law as written and the public attention on the issue, I think it's prudent to put it in statute that, you know, our position is that we're really not worried about this minuscule level. There are industry concerns, very valid concerns about the integrity of the seed supply, notifying people that it has been tested so that when someone does do interpersonal sharing, you know that the department has not actually tested it for foreign matter, noxious weeds, that the germination rate is what it says it is. So there's kind of a give and take there, and we think that we can strike a balance with both groups in addressing their issues.
That is great. My next question is there any way that we could maybe pull this out as a standalone bill? And the reason why I ask this is because, you know, May, when things get signed into law, the crops and flowers will have been planted, thus eliminating some of the seed sharing that could be taking place at that time.
Madam Chair, I would say this. I have high expectations that this bill will move quickly, and so if that becomes an issue later on in the kind of, you know, process of conference committee, but I personally believe, and I have yet to hear from any lobbyists that I know or representative groups, that we have a controversial bill. So if there was something else in our bill that I think would require a lot of work, I would say, you know what, let's peel it out now for the interest of practicality. You draw a good question out. But because I don't think that is the case, I think right now it should be able to all move fairly quickly in time for the farmers and interpersonal seed shares.
That's great. One of the reasons why I love being on the A committee. I'll get along so nicely. All right, Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'll give you the timeline for what's going to happen with the bill, but if you'd permit me to just speak from the heart for a minute. The turkey situation happened back in my home county, back in Pope County, and I want to thank the Department of Ag and the Board of Animal Health, I think even USDA was involved, and for their quick action over the weekend. Last weekend there were people in the area on the ground, and I think have done an outstanding job, and the hope is that the highly pathogenic avian influenza is contained to the one site, and there will be an impact for, we hope, a short while on exports of turkey, or I guess all poultry from our state. And there was an unconfirmed case yesterday that another case had been found in Missouri. I'm not sure on that yet, but again, I just want to thank the department for their outstanding work, Board of Animal Health,
and all those involved in hopefully containing the outbreak to the one site, and thereby limiting the impact of this very serious disease on our number one industry, turkey industry, at least in terms of among the states. So I want to thank them for that. Anyway, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson.
Again, just the timeline for House File 1554, which is probably going to be our ag policy bill for the year. We'll have a delete all amendment. It'll be posted by the close of business on Friday of this week. The Ag Policy Committee then will meet next Tuesday, and we'll take testimony on the delete all amendment and hear a few other individual bills. And amendments to the Omnibus Ag Policy Bill will be due then by 5 o'clock at 5 p.m. on Tuesday. That's the 17th of March. And amendments will be considered and action taken on the Omnibus Ag Policy Bill on Wednesday, the 18th of March. So any questions on that as we move forward? I want to thank all of you for your help in putting this bill together. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Does anyone else wish to testify for or against House File 1554? Otherwise, a further opportunity for testimony will be offered next Tuesday, March 17th. All right, seeing none, Representative Anderson, do you have any final comments?
No, I don't, Madam Chair. We're going to hold the bill over, and we'll be working on it.
All right. Well, this bill is a potential vehicle for an omnibus agricultural policy bill. House File 1554, as amended, is laid over. Oh, and we are not coming back tonight, so this meeting is adjourned.